All right, as we continue on, our next speaker for today is going to be Mr. Kirk Kern. He's the CTO for NetApp's U.S. public sector. He's responsible for developing strategies and partner initiatives that form secure and scalable storage environments for cloud-based and traditional IT environments for public sector customers. He has deep technical knowledge of public sector infrastructures, especially within the DoD and intelligence communities. Prior to this role, he was technical director in NetApp Product Operations Division, leading E-Series Solutions and the NetApp Flash portfolio. He was originally a member of the IBM Federal Systems Division in the early 90s, and please welcome Mr. Kirk Kern to Cloud Computing East.
Great, thank you. All right, let's see here, get this guy rolling. Okay, so that's me. He already announced me. So I'd like to get started by taking a slightly different look at these delivery models. I don't want to spend a lot of time going through the different IaaS and PaaS and storage as a service models. But what I wanted to do is at least make a couple observations at the outset here. And the first thing is that, you know, what we're finding is that CIOs and, infrastructure providers that are building data centers today, they're moving away from becoming, operators or architects of these data centers and more to, embracing new service models. And so as they're doing that, their idea is that they produce IT capabilities faster and cheaper, and they drive more responsiveness back up into their business. We've got these various clouds out here that I've listed that are providing various models for cloud consumption. But before we take a big leap of faith into this, I want to make a couple observations. And the first one is, we have these long cycles of IT delivery. And so I think that gives us a lot of opportunity where we're going to have these areas of coexistence, right? And so what I mean by that, if you think back to the day when mainframes were out there, maybe 30 years ago, and they were the predominant technology in the data center, that there was a prediction that that the mainframes would no longer be in service. And then as you went through the workstation to the desktop and then even to the mobile equipped data centers, we're still finding, mainframes that are out there in the technology space today. And so you see that they can coexist with, even these next generation cloud service models. And so we have to be very pragmatic about what technologies we adopt and how we use them in the data center. And clearly, as we embrace cloud in their various forms, we're going to see that, you're going to have some on-prem clouds, you're going to have some hybrid offerings where you bridge your data and your services out to commercial or even what we call the hyperscaler technologies. And the idea is that you deliver the most cost-effective service delivery possible. And so the brokerage of data into and out of these various clouds as you have these various modules or models available is, I think, what's going to drive the success of your cloud deployments. And so rather than jumping directly into the models themselves, I want to introduce a concept that we call data stewardship. And so that's what we're doing at NetApp. In general, you have to look at some of the methodologies for deployment of these models. So we're going to transfer from brokers or from builders and operators of technologies to brokers of services, right? Fundamentally, you may have your email in one particular cloud, you're going to have your database in a different cloud, and potentially your backup in a third type of cloud source. And the ability to broker the exchange of data between those three sources of compute and storage is going to be essential. Another interesting component of that is the simplicity. Right, so you move away from building these complex infrastructures to one where they're simple to deploy and consume, and so we're going to migrate away from complex IT projects to one where simplicity drives its usefulness. Another interesting component is around the data, right? So traditionally, we protect our information through perimeter-based mechanisms, right? You're going to lock up your data in your data center. You're going to put perimeter controls in the forms of firewalls, intrusion detection systems, and that becomes your boundary for information protection. When you move out to this federated data model, what happens is you have to have embedded security practices. And so we're going to migrate from perimeter-based security to embedded security capabilities. I'll talk briefly in the presentation as we move into that. And then as you step down through the rest of these transitions, you go from asset ownership into business results. So you no longer build an IT system to accomplish a particular task. You actually look at the top at the business, what are you trying to accomplish, and then you go broker for the appropriate service to satisfy your business requirements. And it continues to walk down through the stack here. We move from a static and permanent infrastructure to one that's very dynamic, very elastic, resilient, scalable, right? Those are all the capabilities you get from adopting the cloud. And then the last part is the skills, right? Your skills change in terms of your makeup of your corporation at that point. You go from a makeup where you have a strong ID department that drives a lot of your capabilities for your business to one where the business says, hey, I want to run an analytic framework. I want to manage my opportunities through a platform as a service model. And so things change fundamentally from the top down. And so the conversation that I'd like to have is, you know, as we start to think like service providers, how does the business have to change in order to address these changes? And so it starts with a simple set of questions, right? So, you know, you look across your business and you figure out, you know, what are the business pressures that you're experiencing? Am I having an inability to scale my storage with the amount of data that I'm producing? Do I have a deficiency on compute resources? Do I need to dynamically and robustly adapt my processing infrastructure? Walking down through this chart here, you have, you know, what are the challenges that you face with, you know, running your IT? Are you having an inability to recruit the talent you need to run your SAN infrastructure, for instance? And so all these are key questions that you have to get in front of you before you make that migration to the cloud, because your first step into the cloud isn't, hey, I'm going to go use storage as a service offering because it seems like a good idea. It should have some solid business background behind it in order to make that first step. Okay, so this is an interesting chart, and I'll spend some time on this one. So in order to, you know, make the next level of decision past those strategic questions that I postulated, the idea is that we've kind of put this chart together where you start on the bottom of the chart here on the x-axis with the strategic value. And so the strategic value starts from small to large as you move to the right. And then, of course, the operational flexibility is, you know, up from the bottom to the top. And so it's easier to move an application as you rise to the top of this chart. And so as you bin up your applications, you look at, okay, if I have an application that has high strategic value, maybe it's your corporate assets for your employees, for instance. It has high strategic value, but not a lot of operational flexibility. That tends to mean you're going to keep that in-house and you're going to build an application silo to maintain that information. There may be cases, however, where you can have some operational flexibility with how you manage that data, and so that pushes it up to the top right of this chart where you can start to look at, hey, this is probably a candidate for a private cloud offering. And then, of course, on the left, if you have information that isn't quite as strategic, maybe it's email, maybe it's dev test, and it has the ability to be very flexible, you can push that up into a public cloud offering. And so this is a nice chart that we like to use to frame up a conversation on, you know, how do you best look at your strategy and the ability to accept these or adopt these new cloud technologies. And so as we build this out, here's what we find. So in general, on the top left, web applications tend to fit nicely into these public cloud infrastructures. So you start out small, you have to scale your performance or your ability to answer more web requests. We see public cloud being used quite extensively there. On the right, you move over to dev test. That tends to be private clouds because you want the agility and the robustness of being able to let a developer schedule his programming environment on the fly versus submitting a help desk, right? So I would submit to you that it's quite a dramatic change from going to a trouble ticket or help desk system for requesting IT resources to one where it's dynamic and self-provisioning. And so this is where we think private clouds and dev test is a perfect match. In terms of IT applications, they kind of fit into the middle, right? They're in the middle ground of these zones of virtualization, which may in fact bridge out to the cloud, and I'll cover some of that. And then, of course, there's just some data. Maybe it's classified, maybe it's data that you can't let out of your data center, so you go off and you build a custom application and you keep that in your data center. Do we take questions in here? Does anyone have any questions?
We're gonna
at the end. Okay, sounds good. All right, so let's talk about this data fabric or this data stewardship. So once you've made that decision on what type of service models you might want to procure, the next question comes into play: how do I manage that information across these various clouds, right? And so it starts off with data management paradigms. From a data management perspective, do you want to manage your data from a storage layer, or do you want to have your application manage the data, right? And so in some cases, cloud service providers provide you a mechanism or a management management API, where through its software or application as a service offering, you can actually control the flow of data and place data on particular clouds or even within specific geographic locations. In other cases, you may want the storage layer to automatically manage that and make sure that it's always available across all geographies. And then the next question is data recovery. How do you want to store and recover your information, right? Is the requirement to keep the data on-prem so that you always have instant and low latency recovery from a disaster, or is a cloud recovery model part of your master strategy? In some cases, you'll see co-load data centers, or in other cases, you'll see two separate data centers that are stood up as a primary and a secondary disaster recovery center. All of this dictates some of the design and the choices that you make in terms of what service you procure and how you manage your data. Will you require peak or bursting capability, right? So are there a lot of surges, or is your baseline relatively stable? And so that also has some implications on data. If in fact you have surge capability, you may want to keep hot and remote copies of your data at your secondary data center so that you can burst in real time. And then, of course, you know, this multi-region and the application continuity conversation bolts back into the disaster recovery. And as we move down, we have the performance and business analytics. One of the things that sometimes is ignored is service level objectives, or SLAs, right? Service level objectives come with it that punitive clause, right? So if you exceed or you don't satisfy an SLA, there's almost always some punitive action associated with that. In the case of a service level objective, from a data perspective, what we're attempting to do is satisfy bandwidth requirements, IOPS requirements, data reliability, data availability requirements. And so from a service level objective, we have the ability to actually go in and define those service level capacities on the information and then make sure they're satisfied through any of the cloud computing frameworks. And then the last part is security, all right? When you talk about cloud frameworks, we have, the FedRAMP initiative, for instance. They define the information assurance protection profile in addition to how you manage the risk associated with it. So sometimes it's not always about encryption technology or protecting the information. It's about the ability to audit and control what happens to that information and to know where that information is, which is a different story than protecting the information itself. Okay, so what is NetApp doing about that? We've got an interesting concept in play here. So from a data stewardship perspective, we acknowledge the fact that we're going to have these opportunities for coexistence. There will be private cloud offerings that will be built by government customers and commercial customers, where that information that is highly strategic will stay on-prem and will never ever leave that site. But they still may want to be able to leverage a capability like backup in the cloud, for instance. And so we offer capabilities where you can build those private cloud offerings and still maintain an external interface where you can encrypt and protect that information and send it out to either what we call cloud service providers. Those tend to be regionalized and somewhat smaller cloud capable services, or you have the hyperscalers. And in the case of hyperscalers, these are companies like Amazon and Google and all the big guys. But what happens in that scenario, they tend to also define their own protocol interface into this hyperscaler environment, right? So you'll have APIs, you'll have AMI interfaces, and you tend to use their API definitions rather than relying on your protocols that you're used to running in your data center. And so this is what becomes really interesting. How do you bridge the gap between how you currently run your on-prem gear, right? So you traditionally use protocols like NFS and SIFS, potentially use some object technology in-house, and you're very, very astute at leveraging those protocols and the security mechanisms included in that, right? Once you go out to a hyperscaler, you now have to use their security mechanisms and their API interfaces, so you have to learn a different interface. So conceptually, what we'd like to do is to give the customer the capability to bridge all of these various cloud capabilities with a single data fabric or a data management layer where they can leverage the on-data center, the on-prem capabilities today into their cloud infrastructures. And so it gives us the ability, or gives the customer the ability, to switch between these public and private opportunities, and you can start to steward your data across multiple clouds for the various models of consumption. Okay, and this is an interesting observation. It's I think it's well documented at this point that you can spin up, you know, elastic compute images or virtual machines on the fly. Compute is very resilient and easily movable, right? You can bounce these things between clouds without issue. However, data is not quite like, it doesn't operate in that same way, right? You've got a 100 terabyte volume and a gigabit link. You're going to wait for a few hours before you get your data to where your elastic compute is. And so we have to start gaming the system, so to speak, right? The idea isn't you sit and push all that data out to your next cloud so you can spin up your compute. The idea is to either have it pre-staged or to have some capability, or think of it as build a matrix switch for your data. And so we have a couple offerings where we've started to look at different mechanisms for providing agile data transfer across clouds. And I'll cover that as I go into this. But, you know, think about the fact that, you know, data has inertia and it's difficult to move. So this gives rise to our concept, right? So the first concept is that you use what we have is a storage operating system currently running on ONTAP hardware, we call our fast hardware product. And it creates what's called a storage virtual machine. These storage virtual machines run on hardware that NetApp engineers and builds and you deploy in your data centers. We can take that same software, right, that storage virtual machine, and then we can virtualize it so that it can run in any cloud. So if you think about what a storage virtual machine does on the physical hardware today, it gives you the ability to create little virtual tenant domains. It can bridge out to external protocols. It can peer with itself and mirror data between one storage virtual machine and another storage virtual machine. If you put that up into the cloud, now you have the capability in a cloud to spin up the storage virtual machine and then actually create a peer or a mirror from your on-prem gear to your on-cloud resources. Right? And if we do it right, we could potentially put ourselves out of business in the sense that we're not building hardware anymore. We become a pure play software company in that, you know, we can take the information on your cloud, on your on-prem gear, mirror it up to the cloud, or when you're in the cloud, use that as your primary gateway interface that runs standard networking protocols at that point. And by standard, I'm talking about NFS, SIFS, iSCSI targets, et cetera, et cetera. And so now you have the capability to bridge in real time data information flow from your on-prem data center out to your cloud resources. We also have another mechanism where we're adding into the ONTAP storage operating system the ability to work with those hyperscaler APIs. So think Swift objects, Amazon S3 objects, any of the other ones that are starting to emerge on the market space. And so in the case where you're running on-prem ONTAP gear today, you have the ability to take what we call a snapshot point-in-time copy of our data. You take that information, you push it up to the cloud through that standard API, and then it kind of sits there as objects in a big content repository. In order to read and write that information, well, it's pretty clever, right? We can take that data, we rehydrate it into a standard block interface. So think, and we're talking Amazon, think Elastic Block Store. You read and write that Elastic Block Store, and now you have disaster recovery in the cloud. So you take those snapshots, rehydrate them into a block service, spin up an NFS share, and then attach all your EC2 images directly to that. And then as a final capability that we've been developing, I think a lot of the folks, as you start to look at all these different deployment models, want heterogeneity, right? So heterogeneity from a hypervisor standpoint, right? You build your virtual machine, it runs on VMware. You build your virtual machine, it runs on Hyper-V. We've been able to, because we control all the blocks in that VMDK file, for instance, we have the capability to take a snapshot of that VMDK, create a virtual clone of that VMDK, back out all the configuration information from the network interfaces, the storage interfaces, spin it so that it looks like a VDH for Hyper-V, and then boot it up. All right. And so we have this capability where we're working on an end-to-end matrix where you can basically take any of your virtual machines, sit on NetApp storage controllers, in real time morph their personality, and then boot them up on a different hypervisor. So it really gives the scope and scale of cloud real benefits now, because from a single storage interface, you can boot multiple VMDKs across various hypervisors and then all potentially controlled through something like OpenStack. So that's our vision for the future. We think it's going to be pretty unique and quite exciting. The idea is that you have this universal data platform. We can play games and tricks and co-locate information in real time so that you can dynamically switch cloud providers and cloud services on the fly. The dynamic data portability, I think, is going to be key. And the fact that we also have some embedded security mechanisms, which I don't have time to cover here today, gives us the capability to do all that and also provide security mechanisms at the same time. And the last part is, as these clouds come online, and I don't know, I think the last count, there are 16 or 17 FedRAMP-approved CSPs out there, you'll have the ability to truly, you know, broker for services across multiple cloud service providers and do so in real time. With that, I'll close.